Welcome to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast for corporate refugees who want to do more of what they love and get paid what they're worth. I'm David Schreiner Kahn, your guide and community builder. Smashing the Plateau is more than just a podcast. We're a platform offering resources, accountability, and camaraderie to high-performing professionals who are making the leap from the corporate career track to entrepreneurial business ownership. If you'd like to learn more about how you can do more of what you love and get paid what you're worth, go to smashingtheplateau.com or email us at info@smashingtheplateau.com.
You never know when that's going to happen. And in fact, those are more common than going out and making cold calls or sending cold emails or running ads or anything like that. You are more likely to get business from those types of relationships that you've really created and maintained and nurtured over the years than from strangers.
In today's episode, we dive into the journey of making the leap from a long corporate career to thriving as an independent consultant and coach. If you've ever wondered what it really takes to leave the comfort of a steady job and forge your own path, this conversation is for you. You'll hear firsthand about the unexpected freedoms and challenges of solopreneurship, how to create your own structure and find fulfillment, and why maintaining authentic relationships can be your greatest business asset. We'll also explore powerful lessons on work-life integration, building trust with clients, and the importance of community in both personal and professional growth. Whether you're thinking about going solo or looking for strategies to grow your consulting business, you'll find inspiration and actionable advice in this episode. Now let's welcome Carl Hebenstreit. Carl is a certified executive coach, leadership team, and organization development consultant, and international speaker with over 25 years of corporate experience. He holds a PhD in organizational psychology and has authored three books, The How and Why, Taking Care of Business with the Enneagram, Nina and the Really, Really Tough Decision, and Explicit Expectations, The Essential Guide and Toolkit of Management Fundamentals. Carl, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Great to be here, David.
Carl, you worked over 28 years as an in-house human resources and leadership development and organization development professional. Then 3 years ago, you transitioned to a solopreneur role as an executive coach, an author, speaker, and a consultant in, you know, leadership team and organization development. What led to this change?
Well, I think it has a lot to do with experience and age. So I came to a point in my career where I decided I wanted to be able to deliver the services that really made me happy to a much wider audience rather than be limited within just one organization. And when I looked around and saw what was available in other corporate organizations, I realized the only way I could really do that is through my own solopreneurship and being able to put myself out there and work as a solopreneur, but also, of course, in collaboration with other solopreneurs to be able to deliver these services that I really do think will change the world.
Did you know other people who had made this kind of transition?
I do. In fact, I think it's a common joke. My last corporate role that I left was at Genentech, and it is a known factor that people leave Genentech and start their own organizations and start their own companies to be consultants, either back into Genentech, but also into other biotechs or even into other industries, so companies that are in other industries as well.
Did you find that there were people who tried to talk you out of it?
Nobody tried to talk me out of it. No, that was interesting. So my father was also an entrepreneur, solopreneur. He was laid off from his job after many, many years, and he decided he would start his own company as well. So I had him as a model of someone that was able to do that and be successful at it. And then as I saw others of my colleagues who left Genentech and other organizations through which I'd worked before to start their own solopreneurships or start their own consulting companies, I saw that they were successful as well. So no one really tried to talk me out of it. I knew some of what I would need to do. I learned a lot more of what I did need to do as I was in it. And I can't go back.
Yeah. Carl, what surprised you once you left the employment world and started your own business?
What surprised me is the level of independence and flexibility that I had, which I didn't even realize it would be as great as it was, in being able to select the type of work and clients and organizations in which I worked, as well as the other surprising factor was that I didn't necessarily need to put in the long hours I did when I was in a corporate role. And I was getting a lot more satisfaction from it, from the more limited hours that I did put in. Also, and I think that this is an understatement, when people say that, you know, you really have to market yourself and you have to put yourself out there, there's a lot of administrative roles and functions that you need to do as a solopreneur that I didn't realize that there was so much of it. So there is the marketing, there is the constant paperwork and the sending the invoices and following up on unpaid invoices and creating the proposals and the RFPs and also the taxes and keeping track of all that. And of course, you can't do this all alone. You need to have partners and colleagues that help you with this. So that was more of a surprise.
Yeah. I'm interested in hearing a little bit more about what led to your success in terms of the flexibility of your time. Because one of the things that I hear from a lot of people making the transition is challenges around the lack of structure that you have once you become a solopreneur, because employment gives you a lot of structure. One of the reasons to go out on your own is you may not find a lot of comfort in the structure that the organizational world has created that you have to fit into, yet the total absence of structure is sometimes challenging for people. And, you know, you mentioned the marketing and the administration that goes along with running a business. Also, some people are totally daunted by what they have to do when it comes to marketing. So a combination of lack of structure and especially initially the need to do a lot of marketing can be really daunting. And that combination sometimes leads people to frustration in not having sufficient business, feeling like they made a mistake in jumping out of the corporate net. But I'd love to hear your take, because it sounds like some of these things have actually worked pretty well for you.
They have. Thank you. And I think I've never really had a problem with structure. I do like to create my own structure, even in chaos. So that's never been a problem or a challenge. And that may even go back to one of the first roles I had when I had lost my very first job. So I've had about 5 layoffs during my entire career. After my first layoff, I went into a role as a career management consultant. And one of the first things that we teach people is to create the structure that you lost, right? Create the routines, come up with a plan and say, from this time to this time, I will get up at the same time every morning. I will do something for myself, whether it's to exercise or garden or go for a run or whatever it is. So just create the structure that is missing, and then also create the time that you're going to be spending on focusing on what needs to happen for the work that you'll be doing. So obviously, if you've just lost your job, the work is looking for a new job from this time until this time. I'll be reaching out, I'll be networking, I'll be sending resumes, I'll be looking at job boards, I'll be going to professional association meetings and whatever it is. So actually plan that out. Probably another element of my personality is my ability to really go through boundaries and as if there are no boundaries. So a lot of the time, a lot of the work that I do is because it's integrated into my work life. So a lot of times we talk about work-life balance, which doesn't exist. There's no way to balance it. But what we're realizing is that work-life integration is the way to do it. So I'm a great multitasker, so I'm able to integrate a lot of different things together. And I think that's where, when I see an opportunity or I see the chance to be helpful or be able to make a new networking contact and reach out to someone, I do take it regardless of whether it's in the structured environment or not. So it's really, I think both and. It's the both looking at creating structure that's been lost so that you do have that that ability to move forward and know that you're accomplishing things and checking things off your list and feeling good about that, as opposed to not having the structure and then saying, what did I accomplish today, right? What worked? What didn't work? I didn't even do anything for myself, and I don't see any results from my job search or from my looking for additional clients. And the other realization is that your network, especially if you've been working for an organization or multiple organizations for decades, all the people that you've met and worked with who were your internal clients are either still in some organizations or that you worked in before or are now in new organizations. And they know you. They know your work ethic, your ability to get things done, your talents, your strengths. And all you need to do is remind them that you're there and they will be reaching out to you. I can let you know that I filled out so many RFPs and RFQs and proposals for people that I don't know that have found me, that have not come through. However, people that do know me, they just call and say, we need this. Can you make this happen? And that's where most of the work comes from people that are in your network for decades on end that know you and may even refer you out to other people as well. So I think that's a challenge that most people don't realize, that you do have so many people that can help you and are rooting for you to help you be successful and want to work with you again, rather than trying to find brand new people that are less willing to take a chance on an unknown.
Yeah, thank you for mentioning that. And you have to ask. It's so important to do the outreach. The outreach doesn't have to be hard because these are people who know you and mm-hmm. like you and trust you. But you do have to try to make some contact with them.
Right.
Right. It's a really important point. And I want to go back to something you said. You talked about work-life integration, which is in like 100% alignment with my beliefs. It's like the words work-life balance to me means that something is always going to be out of balance. Mm-hmm. And right, looking at what you do that pays the bills and what you do in your life that doesn't pay the bills, it's all part of one whole. So yes, mm-hmm. it's totally about integration. And I wonder if you could offer some strategies about the kind of thinking that integrates things. Because mm-hmm. you kind of alluded to a little bit of it and how you do it, and it has led to great results.
Yeah. So relationships are going to happen in all different aspects from whatever parts of your life you're engaged in. So social relationships are going to happen from social activities that you do, any extracurricular activities, if you want to put it that way. So for example, when I made a huge move from the East Coast to the West Coast back in the late 90s, I knew nobody in California. All my network was New Jersey. My family was New Jersey. Everything was back on the East Coast. And I made an amazing, it was not even calculated, it was just natural decision. Oh, let me join the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus. I mean, nothing bad will come of that. And only wonderful things happen from that, because that I stayed with that organization for over 20 years. And I made so many friends when the organization was only 100, 150 people to when it grew to over 300 people, and people would come and go. And that becomes part of your network. So all the people that you meet in a social way, doing things that could be a hobby or a passion, that's not work. That's not really, I mean, it is work, but a different kind of work. You're not getting paid for it. That's not where you're earning your living. However, that can lead to that, because so many people from that organization knew me and hired me and brought me in for certain projects. And this was not something that was intentional at all. And when things were rough, when people were losing their jobs, I just created a volunteer job search work team, and people came together and they were helping each other find work and find jobs. And it was life-changing for some of them. I didn't even realize it at the time. But later on, they came back and said, this model that you taught us, or this framework, or this personality assessment really helped me to understand myself and my friends and my family, and then helped me be more effective interpersonally in future roles in other organizations. And you don't know that in the moment, but it's so great to hear that afterwards. So any social engagement that you're involved in, you don't even have to have the explicit intention of saying, I'm going to do this because I'm going to get business out of it. You just show up as yourself, show up authentically, do what you do best. People will see the value that you can add, and they will think about that. And years later, they will remember you and say, I need to reach out to Carl. and bring him in for this, because this was life-changing for me. It can be life-changing for my team, my organization, whatever it is. So you never know when that's going to happen. And in fact, those are more common than going out and making cold calls or sending cold emails or running ads or anything like that. You are more likely to get business from those types of relationships that you've really created and maintained and nurtured over the years than from strangers. So that's where that integration comes in.
Yeah, that's such a good point. So thank you for sharing that. I want to shift a little bit and talk about the actual work itself and the process of connecting with people to actually do the kind of work that consultants like you do. What do you see as the kinds of critical business challenges that companies typically will seek an outside expert, non-employee expert to solve?
So a lot of times companies will be looking for an external to come in to be a coach because they don't necessarily trust the confidentiality of an internal resource. So if someone's working within the organization, and they may even be coaching multiple leaders within the organization, they're not quite certain that confidentiality will continue to exist between all those relationships. So they'd rather have someone who's an external come in, especially if they're looking for a consultant to also let them know what's going on in other parts of the industry, where the internals may not have that visibility into multiple competitors or other companies that are also in the industry or even in the overall competitive market and landscape. So I think when they're looking for objectivity, more confidentiality, more broader knowledge of what's going on in the competitive landscape that's beyond their specific company, that's when companies look to bring in externals. Of course, the other time is when their internals aren't available. A lot of times companies have downsized so much that any internal OD talent or HR talent or people and culture talent doesn't have the bandwidth to be able to support all the needs that each of the individual leaders and organizations and teams has. So when they have those lack of resources internally, that's when they will also reach out externally.
Yeah. And are you finding that in today's marketplace that there are particular places where needs such as yours really have an outsized amount of opportunity?
So interestingly enough, it seems like there is a decline in demand, or at least towards more of the beginning of the year. Now that we're getting closer to the end of the year, I think that people are starting to say, oh, we need to refocus on this because ignoring it is not helping anything. So I think in the first 6 months of this year, 2025, we saw a decline in willingness of organizations to spend money on leadership development and team development type of activities, especially if they were conceived to be or perceived to be, oh, this is, you know, more frivolous or more unnecessary, or maybe even could encroach in the world of DEI. And we're trying to make sure that, you know, we're trying to understand that. And what are we doing with this? So I think people were a lot more reluctant in the first 6 months to engage in any type of activity like that. But now I'm seeing more increased focus on that, saying, oh, yeah, we have these challenges. We have people not being able to talk to each other or communicate with each other or get along with each other, or brand new teams developing, or so many people have left and we have a new culture. How do we manage this? How do we handle this? So I think as it becomes more of a pain point, that's when external consultants are being called in. When there's uncertainty or even questioning around resources and should we be conserving resources and not spending on something like this, then you'll see that there's not as much outreach to the externals.
Mm-hmm. Carl, what are you doing to try to help engagements to be as successful as possible? What kinds of strategies do you find work really well?
So showing up as your authentic self and helping people to understand that they need to be a little bit more vulnerable as well and share more about themselves is what's helping people to have more trust in each other, to gain the trust that they need, and to understand that people come from different perspectives. And we need all those perspectives. We need the diversity of perspective, because if we only have one perspective, we're going to engage in groupthink and we're going to end up with some disasters like we've seen happen in the past. So it's just showing up authentically, listening to what their needs and challenges are, and making sure that the solutions and interventions that I provide meet those challenges. And there's an explicit link that shows how they can get from point A to point B using the different methods and frameworks that I teach them, and also them getting to know each other better to really help them collaboratively come to those solutions, as opposed to thinking that only one person needs to have the answers.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. How are you tapping into community to support your success?
A lot, actually, especially in difficult economic times and socio-political times. We have communities of practice. So I run an Enneagram community of practice for former practitioners at Genentech and some who are still there. And we get together and we talk about what's going on, what kind of support does each of us need, what are we seeing, and how can we help each other out? Especially a lot of times people who were once internal to the organization now becoming external. So a lot of times we can help them in their transition and help them see what they need to be looking out for. And, you know, from as simply as like statements of work and proposals and forms like that they're going to need, or how to create their LLC or anything along those lines, to actually engagement support, to how to look at an engagement, how to go in and what to offer, what not to offer. So there are the communities of practice like that. There are professional associations that are stepping up. I've been involved in a whole bunch of different summits where we've had the conversations, where we've invited people to come into conversations. I'll be doing one actually on Thursday this week, where we're bringing people together from all the helping sciences, if you want to look at it that way. So people who are coaches, people who are psychologists or social workers or therapists, who not only have to help all their clients process and deal with all the difficult things going on, but also have to do that themselves, right? So how do they take care of themselves so they can take care of their clients? So all these networks, all these systems, these communities coming together to really help each other so that we can help even broader populations.
That's great. Carl, what's one thing a corporate refugee can do today that's really going to move the ball forward?
Really make sure that you are nourishing the relationships that you have, not only in your current role, but in your previous roles and previous organizations as well. Make sure that you are providing value. Make sure that people know that the value that they can reach to you for is going to be something that they're going to be able to need in their future and organization. So keep visible, keep top of mind, and make sure that you truly are your authentic, caring self so that people know that you're available and can be tapped into.
Yeah, great advice. Carl, is there anything that I haven't asked you that you want to mention before we close out?
Just to make sure that everyone doesn't take everything on themselves. We cannot accomplish anything just as a single human being. We really need each other for support, for collaboration, for multiplication of the different interventions and services that we're providing and the knowledge that we're trying to put out into the world. So you just can't do it alone. So know that there's no shame in asking for help or telling people that you are now going out on your own and this is what you're doing. And if you ever need someone to do that kind of work, let me know. You know what I've done for you in the past or what we've been able to accomplish together in the past. Let's do it again.
If you don't ask, you don't get.
Exactly.
Carl, if somebody wants to go deeper with anything you've shared today, get copies of your books, for example, or other resources that you have, learn more about you, get in touch with you, where's the best place to go?
So my website is probably the best landing spot, which is performandfunction.com. So it's like a play of a form and function, but it's performandfunction.com spelled out. And of course, LinkedIn is R. Carl Hebenstreit, and Carl's with a K. So it's R-K-A-R-L-H-E-B-E-N-S-T-R-E-I-T. Or you can always send me an email to Carl, K-A-R-L, at performandfunction.com.
And these will all be in the show notes as well. Mm-hmm. Carl, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau and share your insights and some of your experiences. My guest has been executive coach and leadership team and organization development consultant, Carl Hebenstreit. Thank you, Carl, for joining us.
Thank you so much, David.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to this episode of Smashing the Plateau. Our mission is empowering people like you to do more of what you love and get paid what you're worth. Help us spread the message that you can connect passion with profit. Please share this episode with a friend, share it on LinkedIn, and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. I wish you much success in smashing your plateau. See you on our next episode.